This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Usually every time he finished a song, he'd get on a payphone wherever he was in the country and call me and wake me up. And so, like, he'd lay the phone down and start playing his guitar, you know? And that's how I heard this song the first time. I always thought this was a real pretty one. It's called My Old Man.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, your host and editor of MyOldManSaid.com. Joining me for, it's a bit of a, I don't know how to describe this podcast,
show.
But it's not a regular, it's a bits and pieces show because there's a Wolves game coming up. I've been ill, someone's been AWOL. So joining me to catch up on the City game and look ahead to the next Villa adventures of the week, it's Mex Stokes from Villa on Tour. Welcome.
Hello.
And Mr. Chris Budd, whose dulcet tones you just heard there a second ago. Welcome, Mr. Budd.
Hello again.
I quite like the outro of the last show, if listeners have actually heard it. After how many, I don't know how long you've been doing this podcast, but I just totally forgot your name. Mr. Blood.
Ah, yes, we went a little bit urban, didn't we? We basically did an Arsenal fan TV parody.
Or Mr. Bird. What was the first?
There were a few. Mr. Brud, Mr. Bird. There's a lot of
Mr. Brud. Yeah,
there's a few options.
If you are new to the show, this isn't a regular show. We normally have, we do a quick Villa dump, which is 60 seconds on the game. Then we do 3 points where we take more serious and more bizarre issues of the world of football before getting stuck into the main course, which is obviously the game that just took place. But we're just going to go straight to the game that took place because we've got to get the show out. I haven't got time to edit a big lengthy one this week.
And it's a busy week.
It is a busy week as well. We have obviously Wolves in the Cup, which you probably probably half the listeners would have will know the result by now. And then obviously the Scouse arrive in Birmingham to tackle us with or without Jack Grealish. I'm sure we'll find out closer to the day. It's one of those where everybody's trying to find out if he's fit or not, but it's best just to keep the cards under wraps, so to speak, and let Liverpool guess, because they're going to prepare for the game with him in the team. And then if he doesn't appear, maybe there's an advantage, but you've got to make out that there's a possibility of him playing, even if he's out for the next 2 months. That's what they used to do last season. I mean, I saw a tweet from, I think it was the Birmingham Mail Villa chap, saying that Grealish has a ridiculous recovery rate. Well, not on his last couple of injuries, where we were expecting him back in a couple of weeks, then it became a couple of months, and then it became months put onto that. And every time, at every stage, it was almost back, yeah, he'll be back in 2 weeks, he'll be back in 2 weeks, and it just went on and on and on. So anything can happen, but I think it's a knock, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, I think he's taken a kick. It'll be precautionary. I think it just sort of... it probably confirms that he won't feature against Wolves, which I don't think he would have necessarily started, but I think they would have probably had him on the bench.
He would have been on the bench for sure, yeah. Because obviously it's a situation if you need to get that game over the line.
Yeah. And also it's part of their training, isn't it, as well, to sort of get them a little bit of game time.
Yeah, well, as we saw against Brighton.
Yeah.
Max, how was Manchester? Raining as always. Did you get soaked? Because There's no cover, is there, in the bottom lower tiers?
I don't know. It looked like there was, but then I think I was sat in row G, which I don't know how many rows back there is, but I wasn't massively near the front. I was just getting absolutely drenched. Like the whole of the lower tier were just getting horribly wet, and it was freezing cold as well. It was pretty horrible, to be honest.
Yeah, because I can't remember. I think at Villa Park, you're reasonably weatherproof at Villa Park. I mean, you're not coldproof, obviously. And I think, as me and Max were discussing before we started the show, it's going to be a bit of a chilly one when the Wolves come to downtown. But we'll talk about Manchester City first. Although I did have to just pop up to the post office, and I haven't opened my box yet. I don't know if to do it like an online... is it really worth an audio-only unboxing?
No, it's a bit social influency. I mean, it's a bit Manchester City-esque, isn't it? Hashtag football influencers.
Well, I'm going to do it while we talk, because I'm quite curious. Because I've got no idea what it's who's it's from.
This is the special delivery of the nonsometer.
I've got...
do we have to have like a Scott Hogan touch count to decide what it is in the box?
Can you guess what I've got in this box?
Sounds like ASMR so far.
Yeah, here we go. Here's some ASMR.
What's that?
It's not restful, Dave. I don't want to go to sleep.
Some of that. Some of this. Fucking hell.
You're probably due to buy a new microphone, aren't you? So I'm going to say it's equipment.
No, it's actually like a big box, and pretty big box, full of top trumps. World football stars top trumps quiz. Ooh. Quiz with a twist. It's a small packet. There's a big... All of these are like gold packets. Then there's some kind of board game. I'd love to give these out as prizes, but I don't really want to pay the postage on them because they're fucking heavy as well. If you see me in the street, stop me and I'll give you some top trumps. I'll see if I can persuade them to give out some prizes that they actually post out to listeners of the show. Anyway, let's move on to the City game. Lineup, pretty much as we've predicted from the start of the season. We had an inkling that Nakamba and Luiz would line up together against the likes of City or Liverpool. And alas, they did. Although Luiz, I think he got forward a lot more than I was expecting. And he was actually looking good in the early stages of the game anyway.
He looked like a player who had something to prove, didn't he? Which I suppose he doesn't, in City terms, he had to sort of, you know, justify the transfer.
But I think you have to always caveat with him, he's only 21. So it's not as if we're looking at the finished article by any, you know, stretch of the imagination.
He does show splashes of quality though, but it's, you know, it's a big step up coming against the midfield, you know, that he was playing against.
Yeah, but I mean, I can see that being the Liverpool midfield as well, and then basically give or take whether Grealish is fit or not.
Yeah, I think it'll be dependent on, you know, how people play midweek against Wolves as well. You know, Smith will allow for somebody to come in, have a worldie and retain their place, but I think he'll have a rough idea of how he wants to play the next two games.
Max, what did you make of the first half? Did you begin to gather any cautious optimism in terms of getting something out of that game?
A little bit. I think it was kind of what we expected. We knew City would be on the front foot. I think I said it in my video, a lot of teams would have gone to City and just sat back, but I think we did well to occasionally hit them on the counter. McGinn looked bright going forward. He had that one chance, but I think a lot of the City attacks were coming down the left-hand side with Sterling, Silva, and Mendy, which worried me a little bit. I think Gilbert did okay. He wasn't anything fantastic. He did well to cope with it a little bit. Engels was especially good in the first half. But I just think Sterling was ripping Gilbert a new one most of the time. But no, overall, I think we did well in the first half. I think we were all saying at halftime we did really well. And I think we would have done especially well to cope like that throughout the whole game, which I don't think was ever going to happen.
I mean, I mentioned we expected... lost connection. We expected Nakamba and Luiz to play. But that's the thing. You naturally think they're going to both sit, let's say, as two DMs. But the thing is, City come down the flanks. So they really don't play narrow and go through you. Their key is they're wide men. So it doesn't really kind of warrant playing two shielding the back four, don't you think, Chris? But what do you think about our, let's say, wider players in terms of helping out our fullback?
Yeah, that was my big sort of issue, really, because I think Gilbert put a shift in, but he had a hard, especially in the first half, had a really hard sort of spell against, you know, he just got isolated against Sterling and they'd overload him every time. You almost need to double up on him. You know, I before the game was kind of making a bit of an argument for him maybe playing Al Mohammadi as a right midfielder, just to have that sort of double-pronged defence. But obviously you would have lacked your outball then, which I think Trezeguet on a couple of occasions, especially in the first half, he actually was the outball and he carried the ball up the field. You started to see in little glimpses of what he can bring to the table, similarly against Brighton. But I think Target had a slightly easier time, but his sort of attacking flair was very much negated by City, because I think both of the fullbacks knew that if they went forward and got caught out, they knew that Mings and Engels would be exposed. But as far as the back four, they very much played as a flat four, and for the most part I think they did well. They held their shape well. I think Nakamba and Luiz in front kind of held their shape. It was just a case of, again, we couldn't get out enough. We didn't have that out ball, which we used the example of sort of Wolves when they went there and won. They had Adama Traore, who you can, you know, either hit the ball down the flanks from the fullback positions and get him to chase it into the channel. Wesley's not going to do that. You know, you have to sort of turn Man City round, which we didn't do enough.
One problem we have is if we class it as a front three, Wesley, Trezeguet, and, well, in this case, Grealish. It kind of changes, doesn't it? But yeah, let's put Grealish in there. But I don't think Trezeguet, he showed flourishes, but he hasn't got that end conviction, and neither has El Ghazi when he's in the role, and that's obviously why he was dropped. And Wesley also started to show, he was kind of sulking a little bit and moaning a lot in that first half.
Again.
And that's my problem. You know, like Wolves, the way you take Manchester City on is obviously you absorb them, and your best hope is to get them on the counter. But you've got to have weapons to do that. And they've got to be clinical, because you're not going to, you know, we had one or two chances, but you actually have to take those one or two chances. And even at 0-0, I just thought we haven't got that cutting edge to finish this off, or actually, you know, snatch something and do a snatch and grab.
We don't move the ball fast enough to hurt them.
Yeah. And that's why we lost ultimately against Spurs as well, because we didn't have enough, to get that second. And that makes you wonder, have we actually got the quality in Trezeguet and El Ghazi? I mean, there's big question marks still on them still.
I think so. And as I said, it's the thing of having the weapon to hurt them. It's being able to turn Man City around and get them to face their own goal. You know, Gilbert can actually carry the ball, as can Trezeguet. Grealish did it on a couple of occasions. Now, there was one when he picked the ball up, didn't he, on sort of the edge of his own penalty area and ran right up the field. But you've got to get men up with them. You know, with someone like Adama Traore, because he's so strong, he can occupy two players, three players, and you can just take it down the channel or over the top and he'll chase it. And all of a sudden,
well, he's playing wing back now for Wolves.
Yeah,
he's playing wing back now.
Wesley, that's not necessarily his game. We kind of need the ball. But then when we did get it, we couldn't move it quickly enough to sort of play through City. So we were kind of stuck in between, almost playing two styles. You know, we'd go long up to Wesley, and he did try hard in the first half, but it just wasn't sticking. And if it doesn't stick, you're not getting the knockdowns. McGinn would drive on, but I think he faded, you know, in the second half. And I think, unfortunately, the first goal, it kind of knocked the stuffing out of us in the second half before we even started. Because at halftime, we've got a platform in the game here, but you've got to keep it tight for sort of 10, 15 minutes and let City and the crowd kind of get a bit nervy. And because they scored so early, they knew they were in business then. And then it was kind of, unfortunately, inevitable, wasn't it? It was inevitable.
Max, what do you think of Trezeguet overall?
It's a bit of a difficult one, because I don't know, between him and El Ghazi, I'm not too sure. I think Grealish keeps his place on the left-hand side. But in terms of the City game, I think defensively he lacks a bit of awareness. There's a few times where he just got caught out of position. Gilbert was left stranded by himself. And Trezeguet got a bit of a bollocking from Engels, Grealish, etc. So that wasn't ideal. Carrying the ball going forward, he's very good. But his end product, again, lacks. I think there was a chance in the Tottenham game, first game of the season, where he was through on goal and it was a bit of a P-roller again at Arsenal. Probably should have scored when it was 2-2, I think, something like that. But I think the potential's there. It definitely is. I think he doesn't look especially fit as well. I think 60, 70 minutes, he kind of dies down a bit and the pace goes. But I think there's definitely potential there. I just think needs to just defensively and both ends of the pitch needs to work on.
I'm always dubious about people coming out of gyms wearing Gucci tracksuits.
Oh, yeah, I saw that today.
It's like, are you really putting the work in the gym? Or are you just going to bloody pose? All those moments that you just highlighted there are exactly the evidence I'm thinking about when it comes to Trezeguet. And it's unfortunate that he hasn't, maybe he'll come, well, obviously he needs the games because this is a step up from what he's used to. But this is the thing, it's unfortunate we haven't got a squad of at least an option or two that have actually been there, done that, and have experience at this level to provide that cutting edge, because I think we'd have had a few more points this season. But it's very much a learning curve for a lot of these people. A couple of decisions, Stones, there was an incident where Stones was on his backside in the penalty box and actually handballed it twice, I think with both hands. I think back in the day, that could have been interpreted as a penalty. Now, I don't even know what the rule is anymore on penalties, but some people thought, yeah, maybe that could have been given. Others thought, well, you know, it's the way of the world nowadays and it's not intentional. What did you think, Chris?
I mean, it's Villa, so I don't expect to get anything from VAR at the moment. Is it one of those ones that I think should have been looked at further? Maybe. With all due respect to all the decisions, unfortunately, as much as they didn't go our way, I don't think we were deserving of getting, you know, sometimes you buy yourself your own luck, and we didn't really do enough in the game to buy a bit any luck in that game, unfortunately. The second one, you know, the silver goal or whoever it was who actually got given the goal, is that's just poor, especially when the FA come out and, you know, they clearly say, oh yeah, we've given Silva the goal. They've kind of just undermined their own technology.
Well, it's the Premier League, isn't
yeah,
it?
They've just undermined Premier it completely. League. So it's kind of like, well, you know, at least if they give De Bruyne the goal, everyone says, well, at least he, you know, the option isn't there to give him offside. But the fact that they have someone somewhere is saying, oh, we've got this wrong. Just lie.
It's such a farce that they can't even cover their own tracks.
No, exactly.
I mean, because they say, oh, it's an independent body. Well, it doesn't fucking matter, because it's just clarified that decision is wrong. It's just provided evidence that it was wrong. The Football Supporters Association, I think, actually met the Premier League today. So I don't know what they're going to be saying, but we, you know, made sure that the whole notion of better communication of VAR in stadia is put forward, because that's the first step in terms of having any chance of cleaning up the shit show that they've created.
Well, it's just creating some transparency and getting rid of some of the confusion.
Yeah, it would be nice to clear up some of the confusion with actual referees, because they haven't got a clue what's going on, I don't think.
I also hope that, you know, when the tide turns, it falls for us in a really important moment in the season.
Yeah, well, keep wishing on a star.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, this is a game, we haven't won our last 10 games at the Etihad, which is shocking.
And generally speaking, we've got hammered as well on quite a few of occasions.
Yeah, I think the goal difference now is 33-4, which is just ridiculous. I mean, that shows you the position that we've been in over the last few years when we've been in the Premier League, and B, what's actually happened to City.
Well, I mean, the disparity between the two has been ridiculous for the last few seasons, hasn't it?
I mean, to just deconstruct what happens when Manchester City plays Villa, it's normally Villa fans singing Champions of Europe, you'll never sing that. And then them putting three or four past us, and that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
And then us taking the moral high ground about having better supporters.
Yeah, exactly.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
What did you think of the crowd there, Max? Because there's been a lot of debate about it in terms of they've been trying to get social media influencers that support Manchester City to try to create FOMO and excitement about their Champions League games against lesser-known teams to try to get people there. And it just seems like they're clutching at straws now.
Yeah, it's not good at all. I think what I've been to Tottenham, Arsenal already, the top six sides, if you go away to their place, it's basically a tourist club, let's be honest. There's people with half and half scarves hanging about. I've got nothing against that, but it's just sums it up really. Outside the city, the Man City ground as well, it's just weird. Like, I mean, it's something that I'm not used to, and it's something that I hope Villa will never get to. But in terms of the fans from sitting in the away end on the right hand side, there was a group of about 20 or 30 City fans that sang occasionally, but the crowd as a whole was really bad, especially towards the end as well. That when I think it was like 80-85 minutes, they're all leaving. There's pictures doing the rounds of a half empty stadium and a full away end, and it was just strange. It just went over my head. I don't get it, but there you go.
Because I know a couple of the guys who, I mean, for want of a better word, run their atmosphere group, who were responsible for displays and flags. Was there any of that before this game?
I noticed there was...
Because I didn't see it.
There was virtual flags on the sort of computer screens around the ground.
Oh, yeah.
That's weird. There was a Kidderminster City flag, which just was a bit weird.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
I didn't... I think there's been rumours in the past they played crowd noise over the speakers. I didn't see any of that, but it's not good.
You didn't hear any of that?
No.
Never mind see it.
It's really strange because I always remember Manchester City as having a really good sort of, obviously loyal through when they were rubbish and quite a big fan base, but also a relatively loud one. They always used to travel in great numbers, and that the sort of the demographic of their supporters has just changed enormously since they've become successful.
Half the home end was Villa fans as well. I know so many Villa fans in the home end. I spoke to one on the train home.
So I was going to get a ticket in the home end. You could get up to 6 tickets and you could basically sit next to Pep Guardiola's bench as well if you wanted to. But it was just, the price was just ridiculous. I mean, when you bottom price is like 51 quid, you can kind of understand why people aren't going to necessarily rush to go to the games.
And I accept that because, well, even though they've become, you know, a very successful club, the demographic, I still think, of their supporters is probably still very working class. And to bang those prices up and then have the extra games with the Champions League and all the cup stuff that they generally have, it'd be, you know, supporting Man City has all of a sudden become a very expensive exercise.
Yeah, and it's not rocket science. You know, lower the prices, you might fill your stadium with proper fans. That's how it normally kind of works. I mean, interesting, I was looking at Newcastle. Newcastle are doing a lot of, they've got a group, I think it's, I forgot what they're called, it's Galloway, it's basically in the Galloway end where they do massive TIFOs, and I think they've done the biggest ever flag. I think it's 80 by 50 feet last season, which basically covered the whole end at Newcastle. And there's been a lot of positive action. I mean, you know, I'm talking proper massive flags comparable to anything in Europe. But they're now, they've got like 6,000 missing fans. Their attendances are now around the 45, 47 mark, and they always used to, even in the Championship, be over 50,000. And I think theirs is more an owner situation and a kind of a lack of ambition. I think it's more of a result of Benitez going.
Well, it's protesting, isn't it, rather than a lack of longing to.
Yeah, but Manchester City have got Pep Guardiola there, that, like, potentially the sexiest manager you could have in terms of attracting supporters. And Manchester City have obviously just thought, well, we've got Pep Guardiola, let's price it up. And this is where they're kind of missing out.
Well, and they can't say it's not value for money. No, they're getting to watch probably one of the best footballing sides in the world in terms of style of play, entertainment, etc. They're going to see goals pretty much every game.
Yeah, I mean, it isn't value for money, though.
Well, no football game
but
like
not
that
at 50
is,
odd
it's
quid.
Kind of like, what more do they want? It should sell itself at this point, Manchester City.
Yeah, no, but as I'm just saying, they are banking on that, and that's why they're putting the prices up. But obviously, demand isn't meeting that price point, so they're going to have to drop it.
Well, they don't turn up to the Champions League either, which is strange. So it's just kind of a strange dynamic over there at the moment. You know, I understand why you wouldn't bother turning up and paying 50 quid to watch Villa, but when they're playing Champions League games and they still can't fill it out, you kind of think, well, what have you got to do to get these people to turn up?
Well, you lower the prices, simple as that. And you've got to also remember, this is over a sustained period of almost, let's say, a decade now. So there's no novelty factor anymore. So this is the thing. You've got to, I mean, your Arsenals and your Spurs, you know, they're a bit more, I'd say, a bit more dedicated and a bit more up for it. There's more of a culture there. Manchester City have got their original fan base, and then the kind of flaky add-ons don't seem to be interested in, you know, going regularly and paying that kind of top price. Anyway, back to the game, or what's left of it. Ming's getting a bit of I think anybody, Twitter and social media kind of amplifies things, but people starting to look at him just because he obviously fluffed his lines when he went up against Gabriel Jesus. And he was a bit slouchy on that. I mean, maybe because it was the first minute of the second half and he got caught flat-footed, but, you know, you should prepare. Everybody knows about Manchester City's keepers. Boot, and they obviously did prepare for it. But I think he pretty much saved two goals with his unorthodox clearances off the line, because first of all, there was the Capoeira one. I think
it's a great effort.
I stole that, by the way, from Chris from Norway, his description. And then the second one, when I think he creates the situation himself initially, but then obviously player lobs at Heaton and then he backtracks, it hits the bar, but it actually hits the bar and it's going in. And it hits the bar and then hits Mings on the head. He just happens to be in the right place at the right time. So he did save that. It wasn't as if it wasn't going in after it hit the bar. It was. So he kind of made up if you're going to blame him for that goal, I mean, it should have been stopped anyway after that flick on, you could argue. But was there any hassles to Mings on the terraces?
Not really. I don't think so. I think it was always going to be a hard afternoon. But that first clearance was pretty incredible, to be fair. But no, I don't think there was anything massively negative towards him overall. I just think it was a bit of a lapse in concentration for that first one. He probably should have won the header, yes. But no, overall, there's nothing that bad to have a go at him for.
I think against City, you defend as a unit, don't you? And that's the disappointing thing, that for 45 minutes, most fans would have gone in at half-time going, we've done well here. As a unit, defensively, they did well. And then to get, you know, to survive all the sort of tick-attacker and your team being pulled from pillar to post, opened up and still be 0-0, brilliant. To then concede from a big lump up the field, straight down the middle, so disappointing. Of all the ways to concede to Man City, we've had like, couple from like crosses and set plays and a big lump up the park. It's like you wouldn't mind if they rip you open three times. You just go, wow, that's three superbly crafted goals, but they kind of weren't.
Yeah. I think I mentioned Wesley sulking a bit. I saw that Smith was having a go at him from the touchline, basically to get him to book his ideas up, I think. So obviously it is an ongoing concern, more his attitude problem than his ability, because it actually affects it if he's not. I mean, he had a bit of a thankless task at times, but it's something we highlighted, you know, way back, especially in the Playing Dead episode.
And I think, you know, if you compare it to sort of Abraham last season, Abraham would chase everything, wouldn't he? He'd chase the ball into both corners of the field. And that's what fans react to, that even if you're having a bad game or you're being ineffective, you're still putting a shift in. That's why people generally warm to Keenan Davis, because he'll put himself about and he'll try. Wesley, you know, within about 5 or 10 minutes, he kind of gets the inkling that it's maybe not my day today, and then you can sort of see his frustration building, and then he kind of goes missing. And when you've got a lone front man, it's hard enough as it is against a poor to average side. When you're playing one of the best teams in Europe, it's just going to be impossible.
So when we go 3-0 down, the first thing, I mean, Manchester City made subs pretty sharpish after that. So I was thinking, Smith, just take off Grealish, take off McGinn, give the other guys a go. Because at that stage, it's too late. You know, there's no way we're going to rally and get back 3-3 against City. I mean, we did it obviously against Sheffield United, but this is a, you know, different kettle of fish. And you're thinking, this is probably the biggest week we've had upcoming. We've got obviously Wolves, which considering where it is in terms of the round it is, you know, you win that and then suddenly you got a potential to have a decent draw, the way it's set up, to actually be, you know, have a winnable game to get into the semis. And then obviously the Liverpool game, you're thinking, well, just I would take Grealish off here, and then I would also probably take a McGinn off. But all he really did was bring Al Ghazi on, and then obviously Keenan Davis. And it wasn't I don't know what the purpose of those substitutions were, where, and then because Grealish A was on a yellow card and got involved in an incident where he thought, you know, he's risking it there. And then obviously Grealish picks up his injury, and now we're all in hot sweats over whether he's going to be fit, you know, for Liverpool and beyond.
Well, at 3-0, it's not a tactical decision. It's kind of, you've already lost. At 2-0, really, you've lost.
Yeah, but 2-0, you know, never give up. I mean, for example, it's not good to go behind against Manchester City, but, you know, Spurs managed to go 2-0 behind and managed to get a draw out of it, so it's not the end of the world. But in terms of the state of play, this was actually in the second half, and it was game, you know, game, set and match already at 3-0.
Yeah.
Was he allowing Grealish to stay on because Southgate was there? I mean, everybody was blowing smoke up of his arse after the Brighton game, and it's just one game, and it was pretty obvious that Southgate would look at him against better opposition, Manchester City, Liverpool, and he touched the ball, I think, against Manchester City was 44 times, which is just one touch off being half of what he did against Brighton. Now, Brighton's against 10 men as well, and people, you know, for most of the game, and people forget about that. It's a bit easier playing against 10 men when you're a midfielder. Also, that was the lowest amount of touches he's had the whole season. So it's a different kettle of fish, is how you can influence a game against a better team is a bit of a, you know, it's a bigger test.
Well, it's a test of how he is without the ball, isn't it, as well? It's as much of a test of his defensive capabilities as it is of him with the ball.
Yeah, I think off the ball, I thought he was pretty decent.
Regardless of the injury, you should have pulled him off, because he was close to getting sent off. If he hadn't have got injured, he could have got sent off anyway.
Yeah, because it's already turning into a frustrating afternoon, which suddenly what's in the player's mind, there's not much positivity, so there's the potential to only go one way, and so I was surprised that he let that linger. But anyway, is there anything else to talk about this Manchester City game?
No, I think you take the positives, you move on to the next one. You know, nobody expected to go there and win. There were positives to take out of it. There were things they want to learn from it, and you move on to the next game. There's no point in lingering on losing at Manchester City, I don't think.
Yeah, I think what we're doing is we're showing we're competitive enough. And as I've said earlier on, it's just that we haven't got that firepower or that cutting edge from the front three or from the front two or how many we're playing up there. I mean, I think the midfielders is getting us through games and winning us games in the games that we've won. And Wesley needs a bit more support. He needs a bit of a better attitude. And January probably can't come soon enough, because if we get the right players in January, and we only need, like, we're only talking about one or two, it could completely transform us, because I think the foundations are there already.
Well, there's the spine of a good side, a really good side potentially. Yeah.
Max, how are you feeling on the whole situation overall? Because it is kind of 10 games in, so that it is, a let's say, a benchmark to have evaluate.
Yeah, coming out the ground, I don't think I was too depressed looking at the City game itself. But overall, I think we've done better there than a lot of teams will this season. You look at Watford, who are 5-0 down there inside 18 minutes, whatever it was. So, yeah, look, I think we did okay in terms of overall how I'm feeling in this season. I'm not too sad, to be fair. I think we're doing quite well. Like you said, I think in January, maybe if we get a winger or a striker, I think we'll be well on our way to doing quite well this season. I think, you know, 11th, 12th is still where we should be aiming, mid-table. I think there's a lot of sides out there that I think we can beat. You know, look at the bottom four at the moment. We should be doing them. So, you know, if it doesn't go your way against the likes of City and Liverpool, as long as you beat those sides, Norwich, Newcastle, Southampton, as long as you beat them, I think we'll be fine this season.
This is the thing. No, I mean, nobody's absolutely ran through us and trashed us. Like, a few teams have already suffered. You know, you just mentioned Watford, what happened to them against Manchester City. Obviously, Leicester, what they did to Southampton. But Villa have been in all the games, and you know, people were perhaps getting a bit worried at half time that we might actually, you know, I'm talking from a Manchester City side, that we actually might be our day. So the fact that we're having that situation, and you know, we haven't conceded a goal all season away from home in the first half, shows that we're reasonably solid as a unit. So as I said, just cutting edge, and that could change the scenario into 3 points a bit more frequently.
It's kind of a case of putting the pieces together, isn't it, against the better sides, either putting a good defensive display in or put a good attacking display, or you know, there's lots of strands that are nearly there, but it's just bringing it all together now, and that'll just come with time on the training field and the more they play together.
Have you got any other generalisations?
Is the Fat Lady singing yet?
Wolves, next game is Wolves. By the time you listen to this podcast, well, most of you probably be game set and match in that game, so we're not going to waffle on about that. As I said, this is just a catch up because of illness and somebody being AWOL. We haven't had a chance to put out a proper podcast, but we've spoken about Wolves before. We discussed their fixtures going into this game, because obviously they had trips to Newcastle and Bratislava, so that's not exactly been ideal. But this is the hardest one to preview or talk about, because it just depends on, you'll have a much better idea when you finally see the two team sheets with an hour to go.
I mean, you'd expect both teams to make changes. I know Villa will. I think Wolves will make some. It's just, I suppose, it's that thing of to what degree. I mean, I'd expect Villa to make sort of 4 or 5, but I don't think they'll make, like, you know, 10. And I'd expect Wolves to probably do similar.
Max, would you say that both teams would probably be, I don't know, 75% at their full strength? Or lower or higher?
I think Villa will. I don't think Wolves will put out as strong a squad. I've said it before, I don't think their squad's necessarily that big anyway.
No, they've got probably a better starting 11, but I don't think their squad's as big as ours.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I've seen a few Wolves fans on Twitter piping up saying that this is Villa's cup final, etc. But I think, like Chris said, there'll be 5-ish changes. I think McGinn will keep his place, Keenan will start, Jed Steering goal, Constant at the back. But it'll be 50-50, I think, for both sides. But like you said, I don't think we can call it until the team sheets come out.
I'm quite interested to see if the likes of Chester and Codger feature, even if it's just on the bench.
Codger.
I think they may get some game time.
I watched Codger for the under-23s the other day. He was absolutely woeful, woeful.
What was Chester like? Because he was playing.
Yeah, Chester was good,
well,
to be fair. I think he had a massive head injury in the first half. There was blood pouring everywhere, but I think he got pulled after about 80 minutes. But no, he looked good. He might be on the bench tomorrow. I don't think he'll start, but
yeah.
I don't want to see Codger, to be honest.
Yeah, I've got a feeling he will go for the normal League Cup defence and goalkeeper, and then the rest is a little bit more unpredictable. Potentially. I mean, I would go for Wesley, to be honest, because I think he needs to play more.
Absolutely, and just get him the minutes under his belt. You know,
and
get him the opportunity to score.
I would play all those people that have been questioning their cutting edge, I would have them all playing because they need, you know, they need games.
Trezeguet and El Ghazi. I think
yeah,
both of them should
half
start.
Their issue.
Can make sort of three or four changes to our starting line, and potentially it doesn't actually weaken us that much
yeah.
in terms of like player form. And yeah, and bringing Steer in for Heaton is fine. I don't think most people will be expecting that change anyway. I don't think anybody will mind resting one of the centre backs. I wouldn't be surprised if either Mings or Engels does play, and it's with Konsa or maybe Chester or whoever. I wouldn't be surprised to see one of the fullbacks rested. I think Al Mohammadi might come in for Gilbert, but I think if they don't start, I still think these guys will probably find themselves on the bench. I don't think it'll be, you know, a second rate first team and a bunch of kids on the bench. I think everybody will be involved.
But I think Wolves on their day can beat anybody, so they could potentially win this cup. But I think their focus, obviously, you know, everybody's focus is on the league, but I think they've got a good as chance as anybody winning that Europa League. So I think they would probably put that above winning that would be placed above obviously winning the League Cup, so that's why they may not go as strong as Villa. Anyways, anything to add?
We're gonna win,
as with last week.
There you go,
up the fucking Villa.
All right, please do follow Mr. Villa on tour, who's having a bit of beef with Blues fans on Twitter at the moment.
Just I think bit, it's more they're having beef with him.
Yeah.
They're chasing him around town.
At least they watch the videos.
So if you want to be part of Max's new security team, he is a 0-hour contract. He is enlisting people now.
Send me your CV.
Also, please do follow and review this podcast on Apple, Spotify, all the other pod apps as well. And please do become a My Old Man Said patron. Go to myoldmansaid.com. Click on the patron link. I'll be doing shout outs for the new patrons in the next show. Right, until next time when we'll do a proper full length show, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
My old man said.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.